So we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 6, The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Today we are going to be reading three different verses. So it's text 195, which I think you can see on the screen, to 197. And 195 and 196 don't have a purport. So the purport is actually 197. But we'll start with text 195. Okay. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took each word specifically and combined it with the word Atmarama. He thus explained the word Atmarama in 18 different ways. Text 196. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, His different potencies and His transcendental qualities all have inconceivable prowess. It is not possible to explain them fully." And now text 197. Translation. "These three items attract the mind of a perfect student engaged in spiritual activities and overcome all other processes of spiritual activity." Purport. Spiritual activities other than Bhakti Yoga are divided into three categories. Speculative activity conducted by the Jnana Sampradaya, learned scholars. Fruitive activity conducted by the general populace, according to Vedic regulations. And the activities of transcendentalists not engaged in devotional service. There are many different branches of these categories, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His inconceivable potencies and transcendental qualities, attracts the mind of the student engaged in the activities of karma, jnana, yoga, and so forth. The Supreme Lord is full of inconceivable potencies which are related to His person, His energies, and His transcendental qualities. All of these are very attractive to the serious student. Consequently, the Lord is known as Krishna, the all-attractive one. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapadakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamstra Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Pangatam Tam Sajiva Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vatamscha. Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindho, Dinabandho Jagapate, Gopesha, Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostate. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vishwanu, Sute Devi, Pranamami, Hari Priye. Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhyevacha, Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavevi Namonana. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadada, Shivasari Gopu Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, thank you everyone for tuning in this morning, either at Bhaktivedanta Manor in the temple room, in which case you don't have a choice, you have to be there, whether you like it or not. And all those tuning in online, then thank you for getting up early and tuning in. I'd like to thank Bhakti Mohan Prabhu there for guiding us through the Zoom protocol, although we got it all wrong with technical difficulties, and also Urvashi for getting in touch and asking us to give the class this morning. So I would like to give firstly an overview of or put this verse in context, these three verses, 195, 196 and 197. But I wanted to put it in context, not only for myself, who hasn't been at each of your Chaitanya Charitamrita classes over the last, well, however many days you've been on this chapter. This morning, actually, I was listening to the class by Vishakha Mataji, who gave the class on the verses leading up to today's class. So she was talking about this chapter, the liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and she was saying that actually it's, you know, this chapter's been going on a long time. The process of liberation is taking a long time. But to put it into context, firstly, yeah, so the chapter title is The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. This is chapter 6. And this is one of the five most important subject matters in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in no particular order, the five most important subject matters of the Chaitanya Charitamrita are the talks between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya, which is today's chapter, talks between Lord Chaitanya and Prakashananda Saraswati, the third one, talks between Lord Chaitanya and Rupa Goswami. The fourth one is the talks between Lord Chaitanya and Sanatan Goswami. And the fifth most important subject matter, or section, if you like, of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is talks between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. Now, Srila Prabhupada put all of these five most important subject matters into a wonderful book, which I hope you've all read, called The Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which was written by Srila Prabhupada in 1967, but was published in 1968. So very early on in ISKCON. And the reason Srila Prabhupada wrote the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and published it so early on was because Srila Prabhupada, of course, when he came to America in 1966, sorry, when he established ISKCON, and when Prabhupada came to America, he was, of course, when he took board of the Jaladutta, he was 69 years old and he had his 70th birthday on board the Jaladutta. So Srila Prabhupada describes himself that he was at the fag end of life. In other words, you know, he was at the end of his life. He didn't know how long he was going to have. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to give, before he could, if you like, write and translate the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he thought, you know, depending on how long he's got, I will give the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and I will include these five most important sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And of course, he also did the same thing with the Krishna one. So of course, when Srila Prabhupada first came to America, he had already written and translated and published the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto in three parts. And Srila Prabhupada actually said, again, because he didn't know how long he had, he was 70 years old, he said that he put the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness in the first canto. So even if you don't read anything else, just by reading the first canto, those first three parts, everything is contained within the first canto. But the point was that Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to give the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So therefore he gave a summary study of the 10th canto in the form of the Krishna book, which of course was published in 1970 with the help of George Harrison. It's interesting, Srila Prabhupada in the foreword, he says, this nice boy, George Harrison, he is chanting Hare Krishna. You know, George Harrison, of course, was one of the, you know, I mean, you're all there at Bhaktivedanta Manor because of George Harrison. But it's funny, you know, he was one of the biggest stars in the world, you know, member of the Beatles and one of the most famous people. In fact, at one point, John Lennon, he said the Beatles are bigger than Jesus, which is quite a claim. But they were massive. So, Srila Prabhupada, he refers to him as this nice boy. Sriman George Harrison is chanting Hare Krishna and has kindly donated so much for the publication of the Krishna book. But the point is that he gave, you know, in case Srila Prabhupada wouldn't, you know, be with us long enough to give the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly the 10th canto, Srila Prabhupada wanted to give the summary study of the 10th canto in the form of the Krishna book. And as it transpired, Srila Prabhupada wasn't physically with us in order to be able to translate and write the entire 10th canto. Of course, it was completed later on by his disciples. But the point was he gave the summary study. So the same with the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So this chapter, The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, is one of the five most important subject matters or sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, at this particular point, Lord Chaitanya, he's taken sannyas and they've been to Shantipur to see Advaita Acharya. In fact, he was supposed to be going to Vrindavan, but Advaita Acharya tricked him, and he brought him to his house in Shantipur so he could see all the devotees, and particularly Mother Sachi one last time. And Mother Sachi, she convinced Lord Chaitanya that he should go to Jagannath Puri rather than Vrindavan, because it was closer and the pilgrims would go back and forth between Bengal and Jagannath Puri, so she would get to hear news about him. So Lord Chaitanya set off on his journey to Jagannath Puri with Lord Nityananda, Mukunda, Jagadananda Pandit, and Damodar. And when they reached the Bagi River, then Lord Chaitanya entrusted his danda, his sannyas staff, to Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda, he broke the staff into three pieces. And there was many different reasons, actually, that he did this. But the reason that's mentioned, particularly in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srila Prabhupada in the purport, is that there are four different stages of sannyas. And the last two stages, Hamsa and Paramahamsa, a sannyasi is not required to carry a danda. So therefore, Lord Nityananda was thinking, why should Lord Chaitanya have to carry a staff? He is already a Paramahamsa. He's the Supreme Lord. So therefore, he broke the staff into three and he threw it into the river. And also, the other reason that he broke it into three pieces was because, of course, Lord Chaitanya had taken sannyas from Keshava Bharati Maharaj, who was, in the Mayavad school. Because at that time, sannyas, it wasn't really, Vaishnavas didn't really take sannyas. They were like Babaji's. Vaishnav sannyas wasn't really a thing. So therefore, he had to accept the one staff. So Ekadanda means, it represents that everything is one. You know, the living entity and the supreme, everything is one. But the Vaishnav sannyasi, of course, is Sri Dandi, means three rods. And actually, as it happens, there's four rods inside a tree dandi, a tree danda. There's not three rods. But why is it called a tree danda? Because it represents that the living entity, the jiva, should surrender to Krishna in three different ways. With your body, with your mind, and with your words. Or in other words, your BMW. You have to surrender your BMW to Krishna. Like that. And then the fourth rod, which is in the tree danda, represents the jiva, represents the living entity. And it's to show that the living entity and Krishna are separate. They're not one. So like this, this is another reason that Lord Nityananda, he broke the staff into three pieces and he threw it into the river. Anyway, but in order to enhance the pastime, what it meant was that Lord Chaitanya, externally, he was very upset with Lord Nityananda. And he was upset, and therefore he said, right, I'm going to Jagannath Puri alone. Don't come with me. I'm too upset with you. So like this, we have this expression in English, to kill two birds with one stone. But of course, that's not a very Krishna conscious saying. So in Krishna consciousness, we say, to milk two cows with one bucket. But Krishna, he is so wonderful that he can milk unlimited cows with one bucket. So therefore, there's many different layers to Krishna's or Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. But in other words, it enabled him to go to Jagannath Puri alone. So then when Lord Chaitanya, when he got to Jagannath Puri, he saw Lord Jagannath, and of course he fainted in an ecstatic symptom. And now, of course, there are many people, and it's not something so much, I'm not sure if it happens much in Bhaktivedanta manner, in the middle of the kirtan, I could hear the ecstatic kirtan that was being led this morning for Srila Prabhupada's Guru Puja. And I don't know if any devotees fell on the floor and started rolling around and crying tears of ecstasy. We don't see it much in ISKCON Newcastle. Yeah, that's where I'm speaking from today, actually. It's, well, not Newcastle, but Sunderland. Or as His Holiness Jananda Maharaj calls it, Sham Sunderland. Anyway, so in the Northeast and in Sunderland, Sham Sunderland, and in Newcastle, we don't see many people rolling on the floor in ecstasy. But when the devotees were first in India, this was something that the devotees would see quite often. So they approached Srila Prabhupada and they said, you know, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes, you know, people, they come and they're rolling around on the floor in ecstasy and crying. And, you know, what should we do if this happens? And Prabhupada said, you should kick them with boot. One of Prabhupada's famous phrases, kick them with boot on face. And Prabhupada said, if they protest, then it wasn't ecstasy. So like that, Lord Chaitanya, he'd fainted in front of Lord Jagannath, and the temple authorities, you know, the chokidars, they were about to come and beat him with sticks, kick him on the face with boots. But actually, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya at that time, he could understand, you know, this beautiful sannyasi. Lord Chaitanya was 25 years old, so effulgent, beautiful, uncomparable beauty. And he thought, no, there's something different about this person. And he held the cotton swab under his nose and it was moving. So he realized that he was conscious, but in a stage of ecstatic, possessing an ecstatic symptom. Because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, as I was listening this morning to Vishakha Mataji, she was saying that he was so learned, so erudite in the Shastra, that he could understand that this was an ecstatic symptom. So anyway, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya took him back to his house. And he was thinking that this is such a young boy. He's 24 years old. He's so beautiful. You know, generally, a devotee or a person doesn't take sannyas until the age of 50. He's 24 years old, because at that point, at the age of 50, you know, the senses have calmed down a little bit. But when you're in your height of youth, you know, 24 years old, the senses are so powerful. And this sannyasi, he's so beautiful. Therefore, we're going to need to train him up. And also he understood, he saw that Lord Chaitanya was like a second class sannyasi, because he'd taken sannyas in the Bharati line, which wasn't considered such a high line for sannyasis. So therefore, he thought, if I speak Vedanta Sutra to him, I can make him strong and he can uphold his vows as a sannyasi. Now, interestingly, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother-in-law, Gopinathacharya, he was a great devotee. He was a Vaishnav and he could understand and even told Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that actually this is the Supreme Lord himself. This isn't just some sannyasi. This is Krishna himself. And he even presented it shastrically, you know, quoting from different scriptures. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he could not accept this. And Gopinathacharya himself even said to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, actually, you need to be able to receive the mercy of the Supreme Lord before you can understand that he's the Supreme Lord. So Gopinathacharya, he was very upset that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he wouldn't accept that he was Krishna. But anyway, Lord Chaitanya, at this point, he'd come back to consciousness. The devotees, everyone had caught up and they chanted the holy names. And Lord Chaitanya came back to external consciousness. So then Lord Chaitanya, he said, no, it's okay. You know, if Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he's just looking out for my welfare. He just wants me to be a good sannyasi. So in this way, he spoke the Vedanta Sutra to Lord Chaitanya for 7 days. And as we know the story, Lord Chaitanya sat there very silently, in rapt attention. There's a nice purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam where Prabhupada talks about hearing with rapt attention. We'll come onto that a little bit later on. But Lord Chaitanya, he sat there for 7 days, patiently, not saying anything, not asking for any questions. So then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he said, you know, you've sat there for 7 days. Have you understood anything I've said? Like right now, I'm speaking to all of you, Bhaktivedanta Manor temple room and online. And thankfully, I can't see you. Now, what I mean is, I would much rather be there with you. But what I mean is, sometimes if you're giving a class, you look at a few faces in the crowd and some people are turning off, they're switching off, or, you know, they're like getting distracted. That would be the speaker's fault. So that would be my fault. If you're not engaged now, you're not listening, that is my fault. But, you know, if you get to the end of the class and then you say, are there any questions? And no one's got any questions. You kind of think, okay, it probably wasn't a very good class. I've probably lost you know, the attention span of the people in the audience. But can you imagine, you've been speaking for 7 days, you know, there's no, you know, and there's no questions. It's like, has he understood anything I've said? So Lord Chaitanya, in a very humble way, well, actually not. Yeah, what he said was, he said, actually, I understand the Vedanta Sutra perfectly. The Vedanta Sutra is as clear as the sun. He said, but your explanations, they are like clouds covering that sun. You are clouding the real meaning of the Vedanta Sutra. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was taken back. I mean, he was no ordinary person. In fact, he was Brihaspati, the priest of the demigods. You know, there was no one more erudite, no one more learned. He had hundreds and thousands of disciples. And here is this young upstart, you know, this young sannyasi in a second class line. And he is saying that my explanations are clouding the real meaning. So he was taken aback by this. But then, of course, Lord Chaitanya, he went on to explain. And actually he defeated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Through philosophy, through the Shastra. Now, generally, the Vedic system is that if you are defeated in a philosophical debate, then the Vedic system was such that you should submit to that other person. You should accept this other philosophy that you've been beaten by. Just like when Srila Prabhupada, when he first went to see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in 1922, we all know the story. Prabhupada bowed down to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he said to Srila Prabhupada, before he had even sat up, he said, you are an educated young man. He said, you should preach Lord Chaitanya's message all over the world. And Srila Prabhupada at that time, at least externally, because Srila Prabhupada said that never was there a time when I forgot the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. But at least from an external point of view, at that point, Srila Prabhupada, he was a follower of Gandhi. So Srila Prabhupada argued with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He said, you know, you are saying that we should take this message of Lord Chaitanya. You know, we should spread it and preach it all over the world. He said, but how can we do that when India herself is subjugated? We are under the rule of the British. First, let us become liberated from foreign rule, and then we can preach Lord Chaitanya's message. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, you know, he was Thimma. Guru, powerful preacher. He said, no. He said, actually, this message of Lord Chaitanya is so urgent. It is so important that it cannot wait for anything else. And Srila Prabhupada, he was defeated that day by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And Srila Prabhupada later on recalled that he came away from that meeting with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And he said, actually, firstly, he said that the message of Lord Chaitanya is in very good hands, is in expert hands, and he was pleased about that. Because look, Srila Prabhupada was brought up as a Vaishnava, as we know. His father, Gaur Mohan Day, was a pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada dedicates the Krishna book to his father, Gaur Mohan Day. So, but Srila Prabhupada also said, I was very happy that day to have been defeated by my spiritual master, and at that point I accepted him as my eternal spiritual master. So this was the Vedic system. If you were defeated, then you submit to that person and you submit to that person's philosophy. So of course, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was defeated by Lord Chaitanya. So then the tables were turned. Instead of Lord Chaitanya listening to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was listening to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya explains how even the self-satisfied sages, the Atmaramas, they perform devotional service because Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities are so attractive. And he quoted the famous verse, the Atmarama verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, that says that the self-satisfied sages who are not attracted by anything material, they are attracted by Krishna. Because of his all-attractive nature and his inconceivable transcendental qualities. So when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he heard this from Lord Chaitanya, then he said, I would like to hear your explanation of this verse. I'm very much desirous of hearing your explanation of the Atmarama verse. And Lord Chaitanya, actually very humbly, he said, actually, you are a very learned person. I would first like to hear your explanation. This is one thing about Lord Chaitanya, actually. He defeated people with his humility. It wasn't like, you know, like sometimes, you know, like neophyte Hare Krishnas like myself, you know, we think we know something, we're trying to defeat someone, or we're like preaching in a very proud way to defeat someone or to show someone that we know something, speaking person. But actually Lord Chaitanya, like, especially when he came in and he met with the, you know, the devotees, when he met with Prakashananda Saraswati and all the Mayavadis, he sat down in the place where the devotees, where the sadhus or the sages would wash their feet. It's like a dirty place. But Lord Chaitanya, he sat down there and he manifested this wonderful effulgence. And he defeated people actually with this humility. They were thinking, oh, no, please, you can't sit down there where, you know, such a dirty place. And they brought him. So Lord Chaitanya, he defeated people with his humility. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he gave the process of preaching. He said that we should flatter people. He said that, you know, you are a very intelligent person. Like that. You are very learned. You are a great scholar. He said, but you should give all this up and you should surrender to Lord Chaitanya. Anyway, so like this, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he gave an explanation of the Atmarama verse in 9 different ways. But then Lord Chaitanya said to him, actually, there was another purport to this verse. And then he went on to explain it in 18 different ways, but without touching on the previous explanations by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Now, this brings us to today's verse. Sorry, that was a very long overview, putting the verse into context. But as I said, this was for my own benefit, but also for the benefit of any listeners who haven't been tuning in each week. I remember one time I was at Bhaktivedanta Nana and His Holiness Radhanath Swami was giving a class, and it was a wonderful class, as it always is from Radhanath Swami. And he spoke for something like an hour or something like that. And then he said, and now this brings us to today's verse. I always remember that. It was funny, you know, because he can just speak for, you know, ad infinitum on the glories of Krishna. But yes, yeah, so today's verse. These 3 items attract the mind of a perfect student engaged in spiritual activities and overcome all other processes of spiritual activity. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so in other words, these 3 items. So what are the 3 items that Lord Chaitanya is referring to? So we go back to the previous verse, which is verse 196. And there these 3 different items are mentioned. So this is verse 196. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, 1, his different potencies, 2, and his transcendental qualities, 3, all have inconceivable prowess. It is not possible to explain them fully. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his different potencies and his transcendental qualities, they all have inconceivable prowess, and it is not possible to explain them fully. But the point of verse 197 is that actually these 3 things, they attract the mind of a perfect student. In other words, the essence of this verse is that Krishna is all attractive. His potencies are inconceivable, and they're supremely attractive. And in fact, Krishna's qualities are so unlimited and inconceivable that it is said that Anantashesha, with his innumerable, unlimited hoods, he has been describing the glories of Krishna since time immemorial, but he still hasn't come to an end. And in fact, it is said that even Krishna himself does not know the extent of his glories. You know, how can, you know, that seems like a contradiction. If Krishna is omniscient, he's omnipresent, you know, he's Trikalagya, he's the knower of past, present and future, he's the Supreme Lord, he knows everything. How can Krishna not understand his own potencies, his own qualities? So just like that one time Srila Prabhupada, he was asked, actually, he was given a conundrum. Someone tried to trick Srila Prabhupada, and they said, so, you know, if Krishna is all-powerful, he's all-knowing, can Krishna create a mountain that he cannot lift? And no matter what you say there, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. If you say no, he cannot create a mountain that he cannot lift. You say, well, I thought he was all powerful. You know, how can he not create a mountain that he cannot lift? But then if you say, yes, he can create a mountain that he cannot lift, then they can say, well, if he's all powerful, why can't he lift the mountain? So it's like it's a conundrum, trying to trick him out. And Srila Prabhupada, always so expert, he was daksha, one of the qualities of a devotee. Prabhupada said, yes, he can create a mountain that he cannot lift, but then he will lift it. And this is kind of hard for us to understand with our blunt material senses, but this is called a chincha beta beta tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference. And you have to apply this to everything to do with Krishna. Yes, he simultaneously, you know, he can make a mountain that he cannot lift, but then he will lift it anyway. So this is the same with Krishna's qualities. Yes, he's omniscient, he's omnipresent. Krishna cannot fully understand the extent of his glories. But then it's described that Krishna, he expands his understanding so that he can understand his glories. But then Krishna's glories and his qualities expand even further. So then Krishna cannot understand them. So then he has to expand his understanding again. But then his qualities expand again. Like this ad infinitum, there's a constant competition. So even Krishna cannot understand his transcendental potencies and his inconceivable unlimited qualities. In fact, there was a nice pastime with Rukmini and Krishna in Dwarka. Where, you know, usually Rukmini, she was very grave in her demeanor. But one day she was laughing. And Krishna said, what are you laughing at? You know, she said, I know something that you do not. And Krishna said, how is that possible? You know, I am, you know, omnipresent, omniscient, Tri Kalakya, I'm the Supreme Lord. How can you know something that I do not know? And she said, yes. And she was laughing. I know something that you do not know. And he was getting, you know, externally frustrated. What is this? Agitated. How can you know something that I do not know? That is not possible. And she said, finally, yes. She said, I know what it is like to love you. And I know the pleasure derived from serving you. You are the object of love. So you cannot understand the pleasure that the devotees feel in serving you and the love that the devotees feel serving you. So Lord Krishna, he said, then I must also experience this, the love that the devotee feels and the happiness derived from serving me. So of course, then he came as Lord Chaitanya. But the point is that these things, it's hard for us to understand. Even Krishna cannot understand his glories, and we cannot understand them with the blunt material senses. So therefore it is said, Atashi Krishna Namadi, Na Bhavat Krayam Indriye, Seva Nuka, Jiva Do, Swayam Eva Sparachidam. That with our blunt material senses, we cannot understand the name, form, pastimes, paraphernalia, qualities of the Supreme Lord. We cannot understand with our blunt material senses. But it says that we can engage our senses in the senses, in the master of the senses, Hrishikesh, in the service of Krishna, beginning with the tongue, Sevan Mukha Ijivado, Swayameva Sparachada. So the tongue has two different functions. The first one is to vibrate sound. And the second one is to taste food. So by engaging our senses in Krishna's service, beginning with the tongue, by chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by taking Krishna Prasadam, like soon, it is 8:15 now, so very soon it will be breakfast time, you'll be able to taste some wonderful Krishna Prasadam. And like this, it says that our senses, they become Krishna-ized, they become spiritualized, saturated, and then Swayameva Sparachada, then the Supreme Lord becomes manifest. So this is This is the process. Now, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that he says spiritual activities other than bhakti yoga are divided into three categories. So then Prabhupada goes on to explain that there are the karmis, the jnanis, and the yogis. So the karmis, they're engaged in fruitive activities. The jnanis, they want knowledge and ultimately liberation. And the yogis, they are after mystic perfection, mystic yoga siddhis. But there's a very nice verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And you'll have to excuse me. I have got all of my verses lined up on my phone. But as it happens, now I'm having to give the class via the phone. So just give me 1 second and I will find this verse. But it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila, chapter 19, text 149. And the essence of the verse is that, here we go. The essence of the verse is that anyone other than a devotee cannot be peaceful because they want something. Here we go. This is a famous verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, here we go. Krishna Bhakti Nishkama. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakali Ashanta. Because a devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. Fruitive workers desire material enjoyment. So these are the three types of activities or spiritual categories Prabhupada is talking about. This verse perfectly sums it up. So because the devotee of Lord Krishna is desireless, he is peaceful. Fruitive workers desire material enjoyment. Jnanis desire liberation and yogis desire material opulence. Therefore, they are all lusty and cannot be peaceful. So only the devotee can be peaceful because they are desireless. And Prabhupada explains in the purport what it means to be desireless. It doesn't mean to give up all material desires. Because even if we say, yes, I want to become desireless, that in itself is a desire. But what it means is not to want to desire anything for our own sense enjoyment, but only to want to please Krishna. That is called being desireless. But anyone else, the karmis, the jnanis, and yogis, because they want something, therefore they cannot be peaceful. Because no matter what you get in this material world, you will always want more. There was that famous song by Queen. I want it all, I want it all, and I want it now. Anyway, so many songs. The Rolling Stones, I can't get no satisfaction. They've been singing the same song for the last 50 years. So it's understood, you know, you cannot be satisfied in this material world if you always want something, because no matter what you get, you'll always want more. You know, that's the nature of material enjoyment. What is it? What is that? It's temporary and it burns like fire, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. But the devotees, they are actually peaceful, because they only want to serve and please Krishna. Yes, so the point is that pure devotional service is free from these things. There's the famous verse, Anya bilashita sunyam, jnana kama janaritam, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktya uttama. This is one verse that everyone should know. This is the definition of pure devotional service. Why should we know this verse? Because ultimately, we need to know what the goal is, right? In Krishna consciousness, like if you set out on a journey in your car, I'm pointing out there, that's my car, by the way. I'm saying if you set out on a journey in your car and you don't know where you're going, then you're not going to get there. But what do you do when you get in the car? In the old days, you'd get out the map, right? And you'd look in the map. Nowadays, you turn on the sat-nav, right? So the sat-nav, you type in your goal. Okay, I want to go to back to Vedanta Manor from Sunderland. So if I type in as my ultimate goal, back to Vedanta Manor, then it will tell me the way to get there. And the sat-nav will also tell me certain obstacles to avoid. Don't go on the A19 because there's a traffic jam there. Don't go on the M1 because there's been a crash. Take this route instead. So in Krishna consciousness, it's important to know what is the goal. You know, when we sometimes we may lose sight of the goal. We just think that the goal is just to get through the day, you know, just to get through this japa session. Oh, just get my 16 rounds out of the way. And then you finish your 16 rounds and then psh, you throw your bead bag in the corner. Okay, psh, good riddance until another day. Speaking personally, I'm sure you all relish chanting the holy names. But the point is, we need to know what is the goal if we're going somewhere. Keep the goal in mind. When you have the goal in mind, then you don't actually get caught up with the obstacles. It's like a hurdler, right? That in a month or so, it's going to be the Olympic Games in Tokyo. So they have this event, the hurdles, right? But a hurdler, like particularly a sprinter, someone doing the 110-meter hurdles, if you ask them, what are they looking at when they're running the race? They will say, I'm only looking at the finish line. They don't look at the hurdles. They're just looking at the finish line, and automatically you cruise over the hurdles. But if you're looking at the hurdles, if you're looking at the obstacles, you'll just trip over them. So in Krishna consciousness, we need to know what is the goal. And ya bilashita sunyam, jnana karma chalavitam, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. That pure devotional service should be favorable, and it should be free from desires for material gain from fruits of activity or mental speculation. This is the essence. We should be performing devotional service which is favorable. In other words, we want to do it. Not like in the old days when I first joined the temple president, you know, on a feast day, you've been fasting all day, like say Janmashtami, right? You've been fasting till midnight, you know, no food, no drink. And then the temple president would say, okay, can we have some volunteers to serve prasadam? When I first joined the temple, you know, you're a brand new bhakta, you know, you can get away with not volunteering, you know. But after a week, a couple of weeks or so, no, you need to volunteer. So I would be volunteering. But in my mind, I'm saying, please don't pick me. Please don't pick me. Please don't pick me. You know, externally, you're making a show. Yes, this is favorable devotional service. But please, I don't want to serve prasadam. I just want to eat prasadam. I just want to take prasadam. I'm so hungry and tired. But eventually, actually, when you realize, at some point, I realized that actually the real nectar was in serving prasadam, not taking prasadam. That was where the real pleasure came from. Lord Chaitanya used to take pleasure serving his devotees prasadam, and he would serve them. He had such huge hands. Lord Chaitanya was over 7 foot tall, and he would serve enough for what 5 men could eat. But you see that all the associates of Lord Chaitanya, they took great pleasure in serving prasadam. So it should be favorable. That was the point. And free from desires for material gain. And also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's another verse that confirms this, that we won't be happy. Savai pumso paro dharma yato bhaktir doksaje huitakiya pratiyata yayatna yayatma supersedati. That only when one performs uninterrupted, unmotivated devotional service, this will bring complete satisfaction to the self. Nothing else. Now, unmotivated. In other words, only to please Krishna, for God's sake. Like my mum used to tell me when I was growing up, if I was naughty, she would say, for God's sake, stop that. So devotional service means for God's sake. It's not for our sake, it's for God's sake. Like that. Unmotivated, only to please Krishna, and uninterrupted, not the, okay, psh, now I've chanted my 16 rounds, now I can do whatever I like. No, 24/7, 365 days a year, ad infinitum, eternally. That's what it means. That's pure devotional service. And this will bring complete satisfaction to the self. Now, we're running out of time now. We have 4 minutes, so I'm just going to wind it up. The point of this purport is that Krishna is all attractive, right? These three items, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his different potencies and his transcendental qualities, they all have inconceivable prowess, and they can attract the mind of a perfect student engaged in spiritual activities. So what is a perfect student? I just wanted to finish this on these last couple of points. So Prabhupada says in a nice purport, he describes what it means to be a perfect student. Let me go through this. And about how to hear with rapt attention. Actually, I'm not going to go through that just now because I'm running out of time. But the point is, right, we may, we may become a little disheartened that we cannot hear with rapt attention. We're not a perfect student engaged in these spiritual activities. So therefore, how will I become attracted to Krishna? Because the purport, the verse is that these three items attract the mind of a perfect student engaged in spiritual activities. So Krishna will attract us if we're a perfect student. But what if we're not a perfect student? What if we're not hearing with rapt attention? What if we're performing unfavorable devotional service? What if we're putting our hand up and saying, yes, please pick me to serve Prasadam, but we're thinking and we're praying, please don't pick me. What if our devotional service is mixed? It's Karma Mishra Bhakti. It's Yoga Mishra Bhakti. It's Jnana Mishra Bhakti. What if our devotional service is mixed with other things? So therefore, we shouldn't become disheartened. There's a very famous and a very nice verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Our karma, sarvakarmova, moksha karma, udharadi, tivrena, bhakti yogena, yajeta, purusham param. So whether one is free from material desires, our karma, whether one is full of material desires, sarvakarma, or whether one is desiring liberation, moksha karma, that one should certainly worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by continuing with devotional service, one will become purified. Just like Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, he had the biggest material desire. Sometimes we may think about, I'm so full and I have these material desires. You know, what is my material desire? Maybe I want to get a big score on Sankirtan, or maybe I want to get, an extra hour of sleep in the ashram, 7 hours instead of six, or whatever it is. But actually, our material desires pale in comparison to Dhruva Maharaj's. He wanted a kingdom greater than his grandfather, Lord Brahma. But Krishna acted in such a way that he fulfilled his desire, but then he purified him so that all he wanted was devotional service. So Krishna is so attractive that even when we approach him with a material desire, he purifies us, that all we want is him. And I'm just going to finish now. This is just one little pastime, the Sankirtan pastime, which illustrates how that any contact with Krishna, because Krishna is all attractive, which is the main point that we're taking from this purport and verse, is that Krishna is so attractive that he will attract the mind of the soul. Whether a perfect student or whether an imperfect student, Krishna will attract us. So there was one devotee, I'm not going to say his name, but this was in Scotland. So one devotee, he was out shopping in the city center, and he came across his sister being approached by a Sankirtan devotee. So this person, who later on became a devotee, he said, hey, what are you doing selling this book to my little sister? She doesn't want to buy this book. And anyway, what's the money for? So then this devotee, he said, we're collecting for the underprivileged. We don't recommend using these types of lines, but in the past, devotees sometimes have used different lines. So he said, we're collecting for the underprivileged. So this person whose sister was being sold a book, he said, what are you talking about? I am the underprivileged. And this devotee, again, we wouldn't recommend this, but somehow or another, he said, because he picked up a bit of a vibe from this person, he said, I'm not talking about the mentally underprivileged. So then this person, his sister, who had his sister send the book, he got really angry. This person was calling him mentally underprivileged. So he kind of took up a fighting stance. But this devotee, before he was a devotee, he was also a really kind of hard guy. So he also got ready to fight. And then this other devotee, who later on became a devotee, he backed away. But the point was, the next few weeks, in his mind, he was just thinking, oh, if I find those flaming Hare Krishnas, I'm just gonna beat them up, and these Krishnas, Hare Krishnas, and he was just thinking unfavorably in his mind, if only I find a Hare Krishna, I'm gonna give him what for, like that. But the point was, to cut a long story short, he became purified by thinking of Krishna, that within a short space of time afterwards, he also became a devotee. So this is the all attractive nature of Krishna, that he, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his different potencies and his transcendental qualities are so attractive that they will attract the mind of the perfect student, and that we shouldn't worry if we're not a perfect student, Even just by being in contact with Krishna, we will also become perfect, and we will also become attracted by Krishna, who is the all-attractive personality. So we better stop there. Time is up now. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Vaishnav Sangha Vaishnav Seva ki, Nitai Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna. So we'll stop there. I don't know. I think the devotees in the temple room have already gone because there's a school visit today. But if there are any questions from anyone online or any reflections, something you'd like to share with us, then please let us know. We have a few minutes and we can see if anyone wants to share or ask any questions. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Chaitanya Vallabha Prabhu. Thank you so much for that incredibly wonderful and inspiring class. So just to kind of go over some few things that you've mentioned. So you begun the class with giving us an overview about the five most important topics subject, and one of them being the discussion between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of the things that I kind of really found inspiring that you've expressed is the level, the degree that Srila Prabhupada, the endeavor that he went through to make sure that we receive these transcendental wisdom and knowledge, and how he thought he didn't have enough time. So then therefore he summarized that in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And then also he wrote a summary study of the 10th canto called Krishna Book. And then later on, you explained to us a little bit about, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu going to Jagannath Puri because of the request of his mother Sachi. And how when he was going there, Lord Nityananda Prabhu went with him, and then Lord Nityananda Prabhu broke his danda when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him to hold it. And you explained to us the reason why. So two of the reasons you were mentioning was one of them being that Lord Nityananda thought that, Lord Chaitanya took sannyas from a Mayavadi and it's not right, so let's break it. And the other one is that Lord Nityananda Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it didn't make sense for him to hold a danda. So Lord Nityananda thought he was doing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a favor by breaking it. But it was all arranged. It was all arranged to the Lord's arrangement, will. So therefore he can travel to Jagannath Puri alone. And there when he saw Lord Jagannath, he fainted. And then that's when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya saw the Lord fainted. And you were mentioning, I really like the funny story about, how Srila Prabhupada, once a devotee came to Srila Prabhupada and asked him, there's someone rolling around and it seems like he's in ecstasy. So what should we do, Srila Prabhupada? And then after that, Srila Prabhupada said, kick him. And if he reacts, then it's clear that he was just pretending. And if he doesn't, he's truly in ecstasy. I wouldn't really suggest anyone should try that. You also mentioned that how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very intelligent, very scholarly. So he could tell that this wasn't fake. This wasn't unreal. This was real. And then he thought, okay, let me train Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to become a better sannyasi, to become a first-class sannyasi. He felt sorry for him. And then later on, you kind of mentioned about the three items that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was mentioning: his different potency, his transcendental qualities, and his supreme law and supreme personality of Godhead, and how all of this is really to attract our mind to Krishna, and is to show how Krishna is attractive and he's also inconceivable. And the last thing I really liked, I could talk about it a lot, but I'll just you summarized one of the verses from Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, which was really nice. Anya bilashta shunyam jnana kama dhyanavirtam anukulyena krishna no shilanam shilanam bhakti uttama. This was one of the verses that we study in Bhakti Shastri, but yeah, you went and explained a lot about that, about how devotional service shouldn't be for any material profit or without any desire. It shouldn't be fruitive activity. It should be so these were some few things you've mentioned. I really like the last points you were mentioning, though. One of the things that really stood for me personally was when you mentioned how sometimes we put ourselves forward for services, but inside we don't really want to do it. Mm. That really struck me personally, because I've experienced it many, many times. And I guess, how is it that we bring the two together? How can we internally feel the same way about a particular service as we're externally kind of showcasing it? That's my question personally.
Well, firstly, I'd like to say thank you very much for that summary of my class there. You're a real Shrutidar. You've like perfectly remembered the whole thing. You gave the class better than me. So thank you for being such an attentive listener. It's inspiring. Like we were saying, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he's been speaking for 7 days and like, you know, Lord Chaitanya wasn't saying anything. I said, you get to the end of a class and no one's been paying attention. So thank you for paying attention. That's encouraging. And, so your question is, you know, we're putting ourselves forward for service externally, but inside there's a kind of a conflict that we don't really want to do it. So it kind of, in one sense, it kind of seems like insincere. I'm performing service. I'm performing devotional service. But at the same time, you know, there's an inner conflict. I don't really want to do it. Have I understood you correctly? So how do we combine these two opposing things? So it's a good question. It's an interesting question because we hear how devotional service, if one performs devotional service, then one will automatically develop all the good qualities of the demigods. Right? So then, like, you can ask the question, like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? So what comes first? Do we perform devotional service and then the good qualities come? Or do we have to develop the good qualities so that we can engage in devotional service? And again, this is a bit like one of these Achintya Beda Beda Tattva ones. It's inconceivable if one and different. Actually, ultimately, the qualities are there within us anyway. So yes, by performing devotional service, the correct mood and the correct, service attitude and the correct qualities will develop because they're in there anyway. It's not something external. Krishna consciousness is natural within the hearts of all living entities. Srila Prabhupada, he gave the example that he said, these American boys and girls, you know, a few months ago, they did not know anything about Krishna. But now they have become mad after Krishna. So he used this as an example to show that Krishna consciousness was natural within the hearts of all living entities. But it's covered over. So yes, by performing devotional service, it will automatically bring them out. So actually, it's both things. Firstly, we have to try and cultivate the qualities. But at the same time, by performing devotional service, the right qualities will develop. And it's explained in the Madhurya Kadambini that actually there's different types of steadiness. So there's physical steadiness, there's mental, vocal steadiness, and there's mental steadiness. So when we're coming to the stage of steadiness in Krishna consciousness, it will take place in different stages. So firstly, we're trying to achieve physical steadiness. So what physical steadiness means is that we're getting up each day for Mangalati. We're going for the morning program. We're chanting our rounds. We're listening to Srimad Bhagavatam class. We're going out on book distribution. And then we're learning to become physically steady. But at that point, we still don't have vocal steadiness and we don't have mental steadiness. So what that means is physically we're doing the right things, but we're still saying the wrong things and we're still thinking the wrong things. But if you carry on with your physical steadiness, eventually you'll start saying the right things. You'll become vocally steady. And if you carry on being physically steady and vocally steady, eventually you'll become mentally steady. In other words, you'll be thinking the right things. But we shouldn't be concerned with what the mind is saying, you know. There's the famous verse that's quoted in the Bhagavad Gita where, who is it? I can't remember which devotee it is, but he's saying, whenever I think of sex life, my mind, you know, my lips curl into distaste and my mind, you know, rejects the thought. So it's explained that devotee was actually already, you know, until one gets to the level of bhav, one will have these thoughts in their mind. So one will be chanting japa and one will be looking at someone else and thinking, look at the state of that devotee, he's just falling asleep and, you know, oh, look at this person, he's overeating, you know, and you're like, we're being critical of people in our mind, or, but you have to just put that aside. You know, you just have to put aside whatever your mind is saying, whatever you're thinking, and just go ahead and do it anyway. Like Srila Prabhupada said, if you just be enthusiastic and that enthusiasm will come. Utsaha nischayat darya tat tat karma pravartana sangha jagat satovite shabbya bhakti prasidyati. So, you know, this is in the Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita. It says that there are six principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. One, being enthusiastic. Two, endeavoring with confidence. Three, being patient. Four, acting according to the regulative principles. Five, now I have to test how good a scholar I am here now. giving up the association of non-devotees. And six, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Now, Prabhupada here, he says this, and this is really important. This is one of the most positive sentences. He says these six principles will undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. Now, that's such a powerful, positive statement. These six principles will undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. So if we just engage in the process with enthusiasm, with confidence, with patience, even if we're not always completely favorable, we'll just do it. And Prabhupada says in the preface to the Nectar of Instruction, he says that advancement in Krishna consciousness, it depends upon the attitude of the follower. This is one of the most important sentences in all of Prabhupada's books. It's in the preface. We have to develop the right attitude. So if we don't have the right attitude, pray to develop the right attitude, and especially associate with devotees who do have the right attitude. If we see some devotee who's always enthusiastic and always favorably engaged in their devotional service, we just say, Prabhu or Mataji, I see you're always serving so nicely. My mind, I'm always, you know, I'm being critical or I'm unfavorably performing my service. How have you managed to develop such a wonderful service attitude? And probably they will also tell you, to be honest, my mind is complaining like anything, but they're just not paying any attention to the mind. Actually, sorry, I'm going on a bit, but just one thing I remember from when I first joined the temple, you know, you have the association there back to the Antamana of God's Rupa Bihari. And he was like one of my early Shikshu Gurus. He's still a Shikshu Guru. But, you know, he was like, I remembered one time at God's Rupa Prabhu in Liverpool. You know, I was going to the Liverpool Sunday program there, the feast. And, you know, what had happened was I was back in the temple with Godruma Prabhu. All the other devotees had gone out of book distribution. And I said to Godruma Prabhu, my mind's giving me a hard time. What shall I do? And Godruma Prabhu at that time, he said, do you know what my mind is saying now? And I said, no, Prabhu. I was just a bhakta, you know. And he said, my mind is saying to eat the rest of this sweet rice and don't let the other devotees have any. And I said, really, your mind's saying that? He said, yeah. And then he said, and do you know what my mind is saying now? He said, now my mind is saying, once I've eaten the sweet rice, just to go upstairs and just crash out and not bother going out on Sankirtan. And I said, really? Is your mind saying that? And it really struck me, because when you first meet the devotees, you think these devotees, they don't have minds. They don't have a mind. I'm the only one with a mind. And my mind is complaining. But these devotees seem very enthusiastic. So you'll find that what happens is for an enthusiastic devotee, they're just not paying any attention to the mind. They're just getting on with it anyway. They're being physically steady, and then eventually this leads to vocal steadiness, and then eventually mental steadiness. This is the last point. There's a book, a famous book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. So therefore, Krishna consciousness, it's like that. Feel the fear and do it anyway. Master Chahar, do not fear. Do not hesitate. Do not worry. Just throw yourself into your service and everything will work out. Everything will come out in the wash. Sorry, Guru, that was a very long-winded answer to your question.
Did that answer it for you? That's fine, yeah. I just wanted to mention three things I got from that. I think one of the biggest challenges with devotees sometimes is lack of communication. We always think that, you know, we're the ones who have problems, we're the ones who have challenges, and nobody else is going. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we look at senior devotees and people that have been in the movement for a bit longer. It's like, oh, you know, they're performing devotional service so perfectly. They don't have these kind of challenges. But actually, when we talk with devotees, when we actually reveal our heart in confidential, when we express our challenges, we realize that actually, hey, you know, this devotee is actually going exactly the same challenge as I'm going through it. And they have something to share with us that we can learn from them and we can try and overcome our own challenges. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was enthusiasm. I really like that. And I was speaking to a devotee about this, the importance of if you don't feel like doing something, just do it anyway. And eventually you'll feel it. But sometimes we have the formula wrong. It's like, okay, let me wait for the feeling and then let me perform devotional service.
Exactly. And, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, thank you so much, Prabhu. That was such a wonderful answer. And it reconfirmed a lot of things for me that I'm having discussions with devotees about right now. So yeah, really appreciate your time. All glories to your service. Thank you so much.